Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. I'm very excited about today's program because it's about the experience of living in Anchorage and in Alaska, crystallized for a brief moment around an event on the fall equinox, September 21st, when the ephemeral arts group, the Light Brigade, frolics on the shiny face of the Anchorage Museum, among other things. Much more on that in a moment. But just now, let's think about what it means to live here in Anchorage and Alaska. We all do, so we're all experts. We've had a glorious summer, now about 6 weeks of pelting rain, and just ahead 8 months of winter. How do we stay alive to this place? Should we feel special because we live here, or do we have an inferiority complex because we live here? Think about all of that and share your thoughts with us as we explore living in Alaska and expressing that artistically with our guests. So please welcome, we have Bruce Farnsworth, a poet and a writer, and a member of the loose affiliation of artists known as the Light Brigade. Bruce, what else should we know about you, just in a sentence?
Oh, I'm an active member of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation's Live, Work, Play initiative.
Excellent. Thank you for bringing that up. Okay. Next, we have Julie Decker, an artist and writer, right now the interim director at the Anchorage Museum and also its curator. Julie, I don't know how you're doing all that. What else should we know about you?
Longtime Alaskan, came here in 71, and I think longstanding member of the arts community here.
I think that's a legitimate statement. We won't disagree. And finally, please welcome Bree Kessler, an academic scholar of urban spaces and the way people interact with them. Bree was an organizer of last spring's Urban in Alaska conference at UAA. What else should we know about you, Bree?
I'm an assistant professor of health sciences and work at the Center for Community Engagement and Learning here at the University of Alaska. Anchorage, and I came here by way of Detroit and New York City.
And you've lived in Anaktuvik Pass, right?
In Bettles, yeah.
Oh, in Bettles, okay. Yeah. So you've had urban and rural experience here, even if it's short term.
Exactly.
So I want to throw out the phone number for our audience. I've called them experts because they live in Alaska too, so we should hear what they think about celebrating that fact or exploring it, or do they even remember it, you know? So, give us a call at 550-8433 if you're in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 outside of Anchorage, or you can send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I want to start with Bruce because I want to lay the groundwork for this event on September 21st, and it's called Over, Beyond, Across, and Through. Tell us a little bit about it.
About the name or about the event?
Well, you can start with the name and move right into the event.
Well, the event is the culminating event in a series of what the Light Brigade calls urban art interventions. We call them that because we like the idea of of art being created that intervenes in people's everyday experiences in ways that change their perceptions of those experiences. It's sort of, we actually like to think of our work as being in the hacker tradition in that sense, that we turn people's expectations of their place and their daily experiences upside down occasionally. This particular one is the big one. We've been working towards it for quite a long time. We're really excited about it. All of the other four urban art interventions the Light Brigade has created and implemented had names that began with the prefix trans. We did transactions back during the project that Julie was involved in a few years ago, The Birth. Then we did transitions, then transfiction, and then last in the old Ship Creek Power Plant, transposition. And we liked that. We thought those words were fitting to the content of our pieces. And so we made this final one the actual definition of the prefix trans, which if you look it up in the unabridged dictionary is over, beyond, across, through.
Ah, okay. Well, there's a lot of thinking going on into these activities. I did not know about the trans prefixes on everything. Has it been more than a year in the making? These events, 2 years?
Yeah. I forget the exact date that we started talking to Julie as representative of the museum about it, but it was a good year and a half ago that we've been working on this particular one. And while we were making smaller gestures, as we call these other urban art interventions. We've always had the piece that we're going to present on the 21st in mind. As in fact, those others were largely practice sessions for various aspects of the piece we're going to present.
Kind of like a Zen practice. You keep doing it, now you're at the final one and you know what you're doing.
Well, we keep doing it because we're trying to surface all of our weaknesses as a group, as a team, and every time we do one of these, we want things to go wrong so that we can figure out how to make sure they don't go wrong.
Fail forward or something like that, whatever.
I like that.
And I don't think a lot of people know the Light Brigade, so let's just explain what that is, too.
Well, it's kind of it's not an organization. It's not, we don't have any, we don't occupy any physical space. It's just a group of four artists that originally came together, and we call ourselves the Core Four. That's myself and Becky Kendall, who's a choreographer, and Nick Bradford, who's a really great videographer and photographer, and Sheila Wine, a well-known sculptor and theater set designer. And then whenever we have a project, we reach out to other people in the community who we know have skills and abilities that
kind of an elastic group, right?
We actually, kind of the analogy we use is to a carousel in a carnival where the horses go around and around and some people get on and ride around a few times and then they get off and somebody new hops on and they go around for a while.
Yeah. When I saw the word, I thought about bringing the light. Somehow I affiliated it right away with light, and the equinox made me think of that too.
Well, light, in a sense, you could really boil our art practice down to a long meditation on the subject of light. I mean, that actually is our artistic subject, and that's what all of our pieces explore in different ways.
Right. But I also thought of it as a lightweight army.
Ah.
And I also thought that might fit too. I mean, it's not established. It doesn't have an address or anything like that. It just kind of moves around to different places. So it felt a little bit like an army, a guerrilla or something like that. Anyway.
Good observation, by the way, because I think we said in something we wrote about ourselves once that we believe some of the most potent inspiration accumulates in the lightest footprint.
Ah, as in light, the Light Brigade. So we have two other guests in the audience, in the studio, and I want them to hear their voices. So, Julie, let's talk a little bit about your connection to this event. It's happening on the front of the museum. So I was stunned to even, when I first saw the pictures of all the, what do you call those things, scaffolding? I was like, wow, I can't believe this is happening on this shiny new building. So tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, I think the building's a great work of architecture, and why not turn it into a stage for a performance? We have an open space out front. I think putting it into use for the community is part of the plan for the building. The museum has a three-year project called the Northern Initiative, and to put it very simply, it's about using place to connect to people. We think we live in a very distinct place, for better or for worse, and Bree may talk about the worse.
Which is good. It may resonate with some people in the audience.
And I think I think it's for the better, maybe because I'm determined to see it that way.
You're resolute.
But part of our initiative is to use contemporary art to create a narrative about place and to use contemporary artists as scholars, as researchers in the North, and to use that to talk about where we are, which is becoming more and more pertinent, I think, Alaska in the North and the Arctic, and what that means to the rest of the world. So I thought it was a natural fit when the Light Brigade had an idea to turn the museum into a stage, very literally. And I think it fits with our goals, and I think it's going to be tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was a very established arts organization linking up with a non-established. I mean, you're not, like I said, you don't have an address, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, you're ephemeral. And so the connection of the two was really interesting to me. Like, do you both need each other?
I could see the thought bubble over your head, by the way, with the word fly-by-night in it. But I like what you said.
Okay. Oh, you mean as you are fly-by-night or the fly-by-night club? Okay.
No.
I think risks are important, and I think artists are adept at taking risks, and I think institutions are adept at managing risks, and so maybe it's a perfect partnership, but I think it was time for the museum to be an advocate of this kind of risk-taking in our community.
And I know there was a long process, and because it's a municipal building, so it wasn't just Julie Decker saying, sure, let's do this.
It wasn't?
Oh, you thought that was the end of
it? No, it's municipal property. The municipality owns our building and the land we occupy. So yeah, it had to be vetted, and I think it's an important part of the process. It's also how you educate people about what the project is and all of the safety and the work that goes into planning. I think it brings people along with you. It can be laborious and it can be difficult, but it's also critical, I think, to any project and getting people to know and care about it.
Yeah. And actually, Bree, I want to bring you in. Just comment on what you're hearing here.
Yeah, so as Julia referred to, I have a difficulty sometimes living here in Anchorage, but I see that difficulty also as a possibility, much like a place like Detroit, where anything is possible. And so what's hard for me here is that there isn't much urban life, and that's what I crave, and that's how I experience place. And so the Light Brigade's work is very much about creating urban life and these spontaneous things that are happening around the city, which are a really important part of being in an urban place. And as Bruce said, that the Light Brigade's events turn the experience of place upside down, I also think they really make people rethink what it is to be in this place. And also allows people to make connections with each other. I've been to two of the other Light Brigade events, and both times I just talked to whoever was standing next to me, because what's happening makes you want to talk to the person next to you, even if you don't know them, to say, what is happening here? And that's the experience I think people have in many other large cities around the country.
That's what happened to me at the one on the underside of the Ship Creek Bridge, the projection. I forget the exact name of that one, but there was a guy next to me, and he talked to me like he knew me, and he told me all about the Light Brigade. I was being swept into the crowd. And we had a wonderful conversation, and then it was over, and I don't even know his name, you know. But it was fun. It was very fun.
Yeah, but events like those make me think that people in Anchorage want more of those things to happen, because when they do happen, either through the Light Brigade or more authorized events, like for Rondi, lots of people are there and outside and interacting with one another.
And running with the reindeer. Yeah.
But I think our environment builds that kind of community. I mean, I think we have a lot of outdoor activities, and our environment is just so omnipresent that it has this water cooler effect. And I think it's this commonality that we all share, this experience that we're sharing in that moment, whether it was a horrible drive to work or a week of rain. I don't know when that might occur, but
I think we're Seattle now. Right?
I think we end up feeling very hyper-present here, and I think that creates this interaction that doesn't occur in other places sometimes.
Yeah. But do you think we can be just as dulled to our environment? I mean, I feel like we can be, even though the weather is another character in your life here, you know. But you can.
I think we can be for only moments, and then most of the time we can't be. I mean, this is a place where you can't hide from the elements.
Yeah, or you'll feel it if you're not ready. I know I was out of the state for a year, and when I came back, I told Bree this. I just didn't want to drive in a car around town anymore. I wanted to walk, and I wanted to take the bus. I just wanted to see it differently, and I knew if I got back in my car, that whole year would just disappear, you know. And so, I don't know. I'm curious about people who want to get outside of their car. We have a very car-friendly environment because the weather is so tough. It's easy to get into your car. Is that part of what you think we're playing around with here, just the comfort zone of people?
Well, one thing that Bree said that I think is really interesting about for me anyway, being part of the Light Brigade, is that every time we've implemented one of these urban art interventions, there's always been kind of a gathering afterwards, and some kind of after party. And every single time, it's just so fascinating how much energy is is released at the end of something where people have come to it not knowing what to expect, and having, and it being in a very unconventional location, usually some setting where you're not expecting to see contemporary dance combined with, you know, guerrilla lighting in a park and or whatever it is. And people immediately really do want to talk about it. They want to discuss it for a while. And I think that that's kind of one way that you can tell when you are successful in getting people to see the world around them that they're very used to. I don't know if dulled to is the right word, but they're very used to and comfortable with. Suddenly, it just appears really different to them. And I think you have to talk to other people about that kind of thing, because you want to know if anybody else is experiencing what you are, you know, having some kind of a break of the psychotic break or whatever, but so we started planning that in to our events, to allow that to happen, so people didn't have to find a place, and we didn't want people just wandering off to go in small groups to a bar or something to talk about it. We wanted to keep as many people together as we could, and we kind of planned that in. This particular event, that's no exception. We're having an after party immediately
in the museum
following the performance. Yes, we've reserved the museum atrium, and we're going to put as many people as the fire marshal will allow in there, and I think that number is about 400. We're selling tickets to it, though, because there's costs associated with doing an event in the atrium, but we want people to come in there and celebrate with us, and we have a few tickets left. We'd like, you know, to people listening to jump on the opportunity to be part of that. The ticket numbers now are limited, but
yeah,
there are
we have the link to where you can get tickets on alaskapublic.org, along with lots of other links about some of the people that we're going to talk about, the inspirational people that we're going to talk about that inspire these kind of movements. But I wanted to pull Bree back in about sort of the social scientist here. What Bruce was talking about, when people see something and then they have this kind of, they want to talk about it. What's that about?
It's about being an urban citizen, I think, about being experiencing a place and wanting to connect with others around that issue. And another thing that I think is important that work like the Light Brigade does is that it's not a tourist event. So it's something that feels really local and part of your place identity and being in Anchorage and being an Alaskan. And I think that in Anchorage, a lot of events are created around tourism, and even the development of the city is much for tourists, like the gift shops downtown. And so when something happens that feels like this is really a local event, I think that also makes people want to discuss it and identify with it.
If you just joined us and that intriguing comment makes you want to comment, we're talking about the Light Brigade. We're talking about an event on September 21st where aerial dancers are going to dance on the front of the museum. And so we're talking about that, but we're also talking about why have art in public places. And our guests include Bruce Farnsworth of the Light Brigade. Those are the folks presenting this event on September 21st. Julie Decker is here representing the museum and also the Northern Initiative, which is very friendly to the ideas of the Light Brigade and has, we'll talk more about those ideas coming up. And Bree Kessler is actually an urbanist, a social scientist who really looks at the way people behave in cities and, you know, how they maneuver, how they navigate, how they interact with cities. So I'd love to hear from our audience whether you are curious about the Light Brigade or have been to other events or are just going to come and, because you can't imagine dancers on the front of the Anchorage Museum. So give us a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752 or send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So Julie, let's talk a little bit about the Northern Initiative, because it has a lot to do with place and celebrating place. I'm not sure you're exactly in the same framework as Julie or the Northern Initiative. I mean, you guys are talking about light and time, and we haven't really talked about that too much. So actually, I'm going to draw Bruce back in to tell me about, I'm sorry. Talk about why those are motivators for you, because this is the equinox, and that's part of it.
Well, I just, speaking for myself, I've learned most of what I know about the Northern Initiative by reading Julie's blog posts on a site that is managed by and maintained by a grant maker that is probably the leading I guess I would. I think it's safe to say the sort of the leading funder of what they call creative placemaking, and the organization is called Art Place America, and it's a consortium of funders. And I know that they've been supportive of both the Northern Initiative and the work of the Light Brigade. And so one of the requirements that recipients of their grants have is that they have to write about their process and about their initiatives and so on. And so I've read Julie's carefully, and they're really good. In fact, they're very, very interesting. To me, it's the most kind of condensed and deepest description of Julie's thinking, and I'm pretty sure you're the primary designer and thinker and founder of that initiative. And I recommend people read about it. And actually, one of the things that's been most exciting to read it for me is that I feel like it, as when I read it, that it's exactly an open space that she's creating philosophically and artistically, and because it's in the museum physically, for artists to be able to find a way in. And yes, I'm not sure that our subject isn't really Anchorage. It just happens to be where we all live and work, and so this is where we want to explore our subject. But our subject is very, very much related to what it looks and feels like to be an artist in a northern region. And we're not necessarily trying to create any kind of a northern aesthetic, but we are interested in expressing our reaction to being artists living here. And one of the things that just, inescapable is that one of the main governing forces in our lives is light. And it's sometimes darkly absent nature, and that's just a very, very, that's a subject that you could talk about for a really long time.
That's where I feel invited in, I'm not an artist, so I don't know if the Light Brigade is really for artists or is it for all of us, and light makes me feel like it's for all of us, because we all have, because of where we live, this ebb and flow of light is so powerful here.
Well, everybody talks about it. Everybody's light is a subject that comes up all the time in both summer and winter, and everybody has something to say about it. And all I'm saying is that as artists, we talk about it a certain way. And this is the way at least this particular group of artists has chosen to try to participate in the ongoing broader, not just Alaskan, but northern regional conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay,
I think,
Julie.
And to jump in, I think it's for the community. I mean, the audience is much broader than this group of artists. The group of artists are bringing an idea and a concept to the community and to an audience. So yes, it's for you.
Good.
And I don't think artists, create work for themselves or for others. I mean, sometimes they do, but in these settings and in these projects, it's very much a universal idea that's being actualized or given a narrative.
Mm-hmm. And I would add that because these Light Brigade interventions occur outside, that they're meant to attract everyone, anyone walking by. And I think that's really important in the city like Anchorage that's really diverse, but oftentimes people don't see that diversity, perhaps attending other events at the museum, or if it was advertised just as an art event, that might not attract everyone really who mm-hmm. lives in the city. But by having it outside, again, that makes it available to anyone in their car, even driving by. Bruce mentioned to me earlier that people keep calling the police because they keep seeing people scaling the building and wondering what's happening. And so we must have a lot of really great citizens out there. But it's clearly piquing interest of just anyone in the area who's seeing what's happening there already.
Yeah. It wouldn't be giving it away to tell people a little bit about what they're going to actually see. I mean, we talk about dancers on the facade, but are there going to be a lot of them? Are there going to be music lights? What can we expect?
Well, the piece itself, I guess you could, it's the right word is multimedia, but it's an example of expanded cinema primarily. Some people could say it's a movie. I think the thing that people are going to be really drawn into the piece through is through the projections, and I hope so, because it took us a year and a half to create the content of this projection piece, and it's not one of those If you go on YouTube, there's a million examples of people projecting light onto structures all over the world. It's been going on for a long time. It's hard to find any, though, that are very, that have much beneath the surface of them. Mostly they're kind of the high-tech equivalent of a fireworks show, where the purpose is just to kind of dazzle the eye and make you go, wow. But you can find some, but it's really hard to find pieces that contain narrative, like Julie was saying, and that don't so much tell a conventional story that has a beginning, a middle, and end, but have images that have been chosen and developed specifically to deepen our thought process about the north and about light and about time. We actually took a lot of inspiration in creating the projection piece from the particular piece of writing by Alan Lightman. It's a novel that I know a lot of people have read called Einstein's Dreams. And we began really studying the text a long time ago and trying to come up with a way to address it in our own way. And a lot of artists have been involved in that. And we went back to it at this point because we finally had a chance to go back to it. And we went through and really tried to tease out specific passages in Einstein's Dreams that are about light and the connection between light and time. And those are kind of the textual roots of this piece. But it's a projection piece, a piece of expanded cinema with a really, I think, very interesting and important live performance component. And that's where the Dancers of Momentum Dance Collective come in.
Do me a favor, tell me, what is expanded cinema?
It's a term, it's a buzzword, I guess. It's a term to describe that an experimental filmmaker came up with a number of years ago to describe non-narrative moving imagery. And it's and I think that's what we've made.
So it's a movie plus. It's more than a projection. There's action, there's, I don't know.
It doesn't have to be any live performance component to it at all. A lot of expanded cinema is just moving images, but it's non-narrative, sometimes abstract, not strictly storytelling.
Okay. Who wrote it? Did the consortium write it? Did the Core Four write it? How did this piece come into life?
The cinema piece? Well, it's not really written. It was drawn. And it was drawn on a 100-and-some-odd, what do you call those, 100-and-something pieces of bar napkin.
Oh, sticky notes.
No. The different parts of a storyboard.
Oh.
I don't know what, I can't remember the term for that. But anyway, we built a storyboard, and it went bit by bit by bit. We talked about it in weekly meetings for a very, very long time. Talking about it from, you know, what the piece was about, what kind of questions we had in our minds that we wanted to try to solve or at least illuminate. And slowly it just began to take over Sheila Wine's work wall as the sections of it came, you know, started to come into focus. And Sheila was able to actually take all of this conversation through extensive note-taking and discussion and transform it into visual panels. That's the word I was looking for, the panels of a storyboard. And then we brought in a team of animators and filmmakers and videographers and literally built the piece based on that storyboard over the last several months.
Huh. Wow. That's... amazing to hear. I mean, that I can't quite even imagine that process. And I'm going to take a caller because we have one. Hello, Mark.
Hi, this is Mark Butler from Spinard.
Hi, Mark.
And it's been one of the pleasures of my recent life here in Spinard to have met and worked with on a bunch of Spinard projects with Bruce Farnsworth. And I decided to do something that I don't often do. I actually ponied up a few dollars to be a member of their commission, which is a mechanism they use to help fund the ongoing operations. And I've enjoyed it incredibly. And I've enjoyed all three of their smaller pieces that they've done in Anchorage so far. And I'm really, really looking forward to the big event on Saturday, a week from Saturday.
Mark, what do you get out of it? Can you respond to how you felt at the end of some of these earlier pieces?
There's a certain amount of elation and ooh-ah. You weren't sure what's going to happen. I didn't have any idea what kind of things there were going to be. Dancers, were they going to be dressed up? Were there things going off in the air? Were there lights? Was there music? I just had no expectations and no advanced knowledge. And so I enjoyed the surprise. I enjoyed how a lot of the dancers did their and other performers did their stuff. I thought it was all very professional, and I enjoyed that it was all local people. I mm-hmm. thought that was real important. I really had a sense of community, and we went and saw three of them, and we've talked to people that have been to one and not the other, and so forth. And so I just think it's a wonderful idea, and I think it's something to be commended. They're certainly not becoming wealthy millionaires doing this, but they're adding such a texture to our community, and I think it'll be worth it. And I just highly recommend that people are listening, go and participate and stand and look, and by being a member of the audience, you are a critical part of the art. Mm-hmm. With no audience, is there art? I guess it's a philosophical question. Bruce, I'm sure, it's discussed in his mind or publicly many times.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. Certainly a voice of support for experiencing the Light Brigade. If you've just joined us, we're going to take a little break. We're talking about the Light Brigade, an event that will be taking place September 21st on the face of the museum, and a big after party in the museum afterwards. And I want to thank my guests who are here. We'll be back. Bree, who's a social scientist, Bruce, who's a Light Brigade member, and Julie Decker, who is from the museum. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. Today we're talking about Over Beyond, Across and Through, which is an art event taking place at the Anchorage Museum on the outside of the museum, presented by the Light Brigade, a local loose affiliation of artists. And we're talking about art in public places and the effect it has on us, why it's important, how the audience reacts, how the public reacts, how it changes the way we think about a place. The guests in the studio today are Bruce Farnsworth with the Light Brigade, Julie Decker with the Anchorage Museum, partnering with the Light Brigade for this event, and Bree Kessler, who's an urbanist and an environmental psychologist who studies the way people interact with place. So anyway, let's start with you, Bree. You had this thought about one event might spark other events.
Right, that's generally the idea of what happens in other major cities around the country, that people see these events happening. And some other examples are things like Parking Day. And parking, you have to imagine the park part is separate from the ing. And that's an event that happens around the country on September 20th, where people take over parking spots and make them into gardens or areas that people can imagine what could this space be if it wasn't a parking spot. And I've always thought that that would be a really great event to see here. There's a lot of parking areas that are quite empty, especially during the week around town. So what if people took those spaces over? So if by seeing an event like that happen, like the Light Brigade, will it inspire other urban interventions into the space that make people think about what's possible? And one of these interventions that I'm working on with my students in the civic learning class through the Center for Community Engagement here at the university is a pop-up museum in Fairview in the neighborhood. And Julie and the museum are helping us with that. And that's going to be November 9th in Fairview. And the idea is that people from the neighborhood will bring artifacts or pictures or things from their neighborhood to the to this pop-up museum that will only exist for a few hours in this one day as a way to talk about the neighborhood and what's happening there and sort of counter the images that people have about what Fairview is.
Does this happen? Does a pop-up museum happen in a parking lot?
It will. So we haven't confirmed which parking lot yet. Uh-huh. But look for information around town. We're going to start an Instagram campaign soon, so that information will be available. But I think these events especially are important as we're planning for the centennial.
That's true. 100 years of Anchorage history.
Yeah, about what is the history and who's creating it around town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me throw the numbers out there. I forgot. 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 or give us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. That's about place. And I want to get back to the museum and talk about the Northern Initiative, because one of the things I've heard some artists talk about in Anchorage is a fear of being provincial, a fear of celebrating Northern art and not really doing things that are different from that. And so I know the Northern Initiative is reaching out beyond and bringing artists, international artists here. So let's talk about that.
Well, I think it's not about redefining Northern for people from outside. It's about redefining Northern for us. And, you know, to me, Northern art is really not about what happened 100 years ago. It's about what's happening now and about these urban interventions and about artists' interests in the environment and the landscape and in a brand new way that's much more active and engaged than static works of art. And for us, it's a very local project in that we want to celebrate and educate people about the artists and the scholars of the North and beyond Alaska.
You have a science component, even, right?
And we're an encyclopedic museum, so mm-hmm. For us it is about connecting everyone. But contemporary artists provide a very compelling voice to that and should be part of that. So contemporary art is a huge part of the Northern Initiative in what we're doing, and it's about celebrating the local, and in that way it becomes an international project. So we use what's happening here and the people that are here and give them a stronger voice and use our resources to encourage people to invest emotionally and in other ways in the North.
Do you have to fight against the frontier mentality that, like, I'm
sure,
here?
Sure, but, you know, I think we own that more than we realize, that that's not placed upon us, that, you know, we tend to own that and to see
a
disadvantage in our place in a way that, you know, I think it's a tremendous advantage that we live here, that this is a place that people come to from around the world, that there's interest in terms of ecotourism and changes in the Arctic. And you know, we should be the voice for that. We shouldn't import people here and then send them back to become our voice of the North.
Well, what about Bree's comment about the Light Brigade is doing something for residents, and you know, certainly the museum is there for tourists, but how do you feel about it being there for residents?
No, I think I would.
You disagree?
I would strongly disagree. Uh-huh. Sure. We're a local museum. We are owned by the municipality. We have 9 months of programs that are very much about our local environment, 12 months of programs. There's only, you know, 3 months that we have an audience that extends beyond our borders, typically.
Mm-hmm. So how's your attendance all through winter? I mean, do you see the locals flood back in when the tourists are gone?
Sure, yes. Yeah, yeah, we get thousands of people on First Friday. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think we are owned by the public, and we always have been. We're a community institution. We're about recognizing and celebrating and expanding the local. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting about this project is it makes the local international as well. So it's looking at other ways that places like Helsinki and other things that are considered places that are considered to be great northern cities. We have all of that. It's just that we haven't learned how to talk about ourselves that way.
Do we have all of that, Bree?
Well, that's something that we're investigating, and I'm not the only faculty member at the university who's interested in that. But why does it work in Helsinki? Why in Helsinki are people out in urban spaces during the winter? Sure, like, people are skiing in here. Everyone has no problem with cross-country skiing when it's negative 15 out, but it would be really hard to get people to meet in a public space outside for an event during that kind of weather. But why might it work in these other cities? And there's other factors
at play.
Except
it's not difficult. We do have northern activities that bring people together. Their frostbite foot race gets 1,000 people out. for Rondi is another example, but I think this
Julie's being modest because she didn't even mention the Freeze Project, which she conceived of.
Yeah, I was thinking of the Freeze Project on the park trip.
I thought of the Freeze Project too, but you know, I think you're being modest. But I think the Freeze Project and projects like this really are about involving contemporary art in that narrative, and I think that's what's different about it from For Rendezvous and other things that have been well embraced by this community, that this is about creating a much more conceptual, broader experience, one that continues to connect people past one month and one time. So it's about building a community, building a network of artists, creating collaborations. Mm-hmm. And I think what's distinct about Light Brigade and about the Freeze Project and other, and about the Pop-Up Museum is that they're very community-based, they're very collaborative. It's not one organization, one institution. I think what's remarkable about what's happening is that there's a number of individuals and organizations coming together to say, we all own this idea. Mm-hmm. We all want to see this happen. We want this urban place.
Yeah. I'm thinking about First Fridays as one of those. It comes up once a month, the First Friday. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they seem to be always thriving to me. And they're about 10 years old now, right?
Actually, we started those in 1994.
Really?
Yes.
But it wasn't always what it was, what it is today.
Yes, it was.
Really?
Yeah.
With the same?
Actually, it was the International Gallery and a gallery my dad and I had that decided to collaborate in 1994 to change openings from a Monday night where you got about seven people, including the artist, and a glass of wine. And to say, let's share in this experience. Let's find one night where we all come together. We invite people. And the first Friday had about 600 people. So it was pretty instantaneous that there was this need, this willingness to collaborate, to come together, that there was an arts community here that wasn't about separate individuals that craved this experience, that wanted this moment. And, you know, of course, since then, it's grown and grown, and there are increasing numbers of people and places, but I think the concept is still the same. And
Yeah. So that was just, I was thinking of that as one of those, it's not so spontaneous, it's on the calendar, we know it's going to happen, but people come out for that.
Yeah, and they spontaneously meet in the street, and you're not sure what's going to happen in every gallery. I mean, there's a lot of excitement around it and a reason to be out there.
Mm-hmm. I think what people embraced about it was that it made these places and art accessible. You know, it was big enough that you could be anonymous. You didn't have to have something to say about the artwork. It became an experience instead of some scholarly endeavor. And
scary.
Yeah.
It also has a way of inspiring artists to really to make work, but also to make the best work they can make.
Yeah. I also think it repopulates downtown. I mean, for other people, I'm not sure their experience of being downtown, but there's times when you're down there that you would think it would be more busy, and it's not. And so I think First Friday is really wonderful because it's not about the tourist shops, although some of them participate in it. It's a way for people to feel like there's something happening. And cities that are more dense attract more density. So what we actually need is more people to be there for more people to want to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think since First Friday exists, then we say, great, but we don't want to stop there. We don't want to fall back on that. Now that's our crutch. Well, we have First Friday. You know, there needs to be times and other ways to create more reasons to get out, different experiences. Mm-hmm. That.
Mm-hmm. Did you like, was the Freeze a success? I mean, you know, did you get the people out that you wanted?
Yes. It was one of those projects that was the lowest temperatures on record for January in Anchorage. And my fondest memories of that project, and for those people who don't know what I'm talking about, we created these large outdoor installations along the Anchorage Park Strip, brought in local artists from around the world to come here. And so we had this incredible community experience among artists because it was so cold. And it was that idea that I was talking about where the environment brings you together, becomes this water cooler experience. So we'd gather in this little construction shelter and we shared that experience. And then it opened to the public and there were thousands of people and it was cold.
Kind of a
defiance. And then it started to melt. So 2 weeks later, it was 30 degrees. So 60 degree temperature shift. And people said, oh, that's tragic. This thing melted. But again, it was everybody people started talking about it again. And got out there again, and they wanted to see this tragedy of these sculptures melting. So it created a new audience and a new dialogue. So.
That's interesting. Well, you've had the Norseman Initiative for a year, and from my understanding, you're experimenting with things, trying to figure out what might become new things in the museum. Tell me a little bit about what you've learned.
So the Northern Initiative includes everything from exhibits to public programs to conferences to just ways to get people together and have dialogue. So we've started an international artist-in-residence program, and that really kicked off starting last month.
Who's here? Where are they from?
We have an artist from Poland, from Detroit, from Seattle. We're bringing them in because of their interest in the North. Because they're not necessarily Northerners, but they're investigating the ideas that we're really interested in exploring here. And then in January, we kick off a program where we involve local artists and not just connect them to outsiders, but make sure that the insiders have the strongest voice in this program. So,
do you know who those local artists are already?
We have a proposal process that will go online in December.
So people can apply.
Yes. Exactly.
And what do you give them? I mean, do you send them out to places in Alaska, or do they come with a project?
They come with a proposal. We'll send them around the Arctic. What we want to know is what they're interested in exploring, and then our job is to invest in that intellectually and through resources, and to see what happens. We're not guiding that process. We believe in the artistic process and the validity of that and the integrity of that. So to us, it's really important to let the artists tell us where it's taking them, to give that the time. So we give artists a year to work on their work for us to support that. In a year, and they come back to Alaska and tell us what their experiences were and what it meant. And they kick off a new group of artists that come in. So as the program grows, so next year we'll have 15 artists interacting with each other in August.
So they're a cohort.
Another five come in. And so, you know, after 3 years, you have dozens of people that are involved in this project.
Wow. It sounds like very fertile territory. I mean, a lot of minds focused on not the same thing, but same geography, maybe.
I think the same kind of energy for learning, for exploring, for developing ideas. So it's a different kind of art. It's not about creating paintings. It's about exploring ideas.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to welcome another caller. Duke, you're on Hometown Alaska.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to make a quick comment about the frieze was something that was just really spectacular. An earlier performance at the Light Brigade did at Hermit Park was probably one of the most impressive performances using work lights and power strips and just really low tech, but just a beautiful presentation. And applaud all you guys for being a big part of that. You know, when First Friday started, it was kind of a small group, and you know, from that time till now, we've really got our legs under us a little bit more, and these things just reinforce that. And great work, thank you.
Thanks, Duke. I appreciate it. So where are we? What else do we want to talk about the Light Brigade, about the Northern Initiative, about the way people interact in cities? It's open.
How much time do we have?
12 minutes.
Well, one thing I want to mention about, because I left it out of the description of the piece that we're going to be doing on the 21st, and it's a really important element. When I referred to it as a piece of expanded cinema with a live performance element embodied in the dancers from Momentum Dance Collective, another really, really important piece, because it's a way that imagery gets sort of driven, I think, into people's brains and into people's nervous systems, is through sound and music. And this piece is going to be accompanied by a beautiful piece of original composition by a young Alaskan composer named Ethan Woods. And I think people should come expecting to, yes, be, I think, entertained and I hope really, really engaged by everything that's happening on the surface of the museum, because it's such a beautiful, just a beautiful place to place these projections and to place these dancers. But a big part of it is going to be the the sound bath that everybody will be just kind of absorbed in. And I think it's going to be a really beautiful, beautiful part of it. And that will continue through the after party, too, because an ensemble has been brought together of musicians who work in experimental jazz and performance poetry that is spontaneous, and we're going to maintain that whole element of spontaneity and creating on the fly all throughout the evening. And so the after party is as much a concert as it is anything, and that's one of the reasons that we feel comfortable selling tickets to it.
Yeah.
Not just the lovely hors d'oeuvres created by the Marx Brothers, but also the concert nature. We think it's going to be a great environment for people to come in and do what we were talking about before, where they just start to talk about what they've just experienced and talk about it in the context of the museum and the community, and that's all really
exciting. What about harnessing that energy? You know, it erupts because of this moment. Is there any thought about harnessing it?
I think this might be a good time to mention live, work, play.
Go for it.
So I think it's important to know that it's significant that people are coming together to share and organize these experiences, and to know that we're not the only ones thinking about quite the buzz term, so I hate to use it, but creative placemaking. So using artists as a way to activate place and using culture as a way to start to define place, and really activating a vibrant community through these kinds of projects.
Mm-hmm.
But the Anchorage Economic Development Council has put a lot of work and effort into organizing their initiative called Live, Work, Play, which is just about marketing a community in a way that Helsinki does. And I think the only difference between us and Helsinki is that they own
the marketing
and market it. You know, it's the way they get to talk about
it.
And they've been doing it. And we're a young place.
Yeah.
This is an exciting time that this is happening, that that policymakers, artists, museums, university instructors, everybody's coming together and creating a unified effort. And so I think it's important to know that these initiatives don't stand alone. They're not siloed, and that I think we're at the beginning of a pretty creative time in Anchorage.
And I think that we've talked a lot about artists or people who are part of institutions, but it's important to know that you really could just be any person to do these types of things. And I was in Helsinki in May and attended this amazing event called Restaurant Day that happens also around the world. It's a carnival of pop-up restaurants, meaning, again, that people just create a restaurant for one day that's designated, and there's a map that you can download. And there were 1,500 pop-up restaurants around Helsinki, and that was just created by some people who were interested in food. So that's something that could also happen here, and doesn't even take any funding for it to happen. It just takes a group of people to organize or send out messages on Facebook. I think there's a lot of potential for these do-it-yourself urbanist projects, and the ones that are authorized and have funding are really important, but it's also really important for the city to have, maybe we don't need to call them like underground affairs, but these do-it-yourself projects by people from all over our community and all kinds of people.
I think our community has that advantage that you can still be an individual and make something happen. And I think, you know,
it's
we're probably all illustrative of that, that, you know, you have an idea that's small enough place and invigorated enough place, and the community will embrace it enough that you can make your idea happen. That's not true of every place, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah. It's the small townness of Anchorage. Mm-hmm. I just was worrying about the rain, Bruce, and I just want to ask you about the dancers and the rain, and also what challenges did the dancers face? You know, I mean, they went, I know that I read on the website that they went outside.
Mainly hypothermia.
Yeah.
Really.
It's, I mean, they're wearing layers of tights and
bare feet.
Are they on bare feet? Because
aerialists have discovered, actually, that barefoot is is really the best way to be able to interact with that glass wall of the museum. That's not true of the rooftop dancers, of course, because they're on this flat surface that isn't glass, what about rain? Yeah, well, you know, we make all of our work according to a small list of dogma that we've been pretty attached to, that we've stayed pretty consistent with, and one of those things is one of those the dogmatic prerogatives is we, all of our work is one time only. And I guess it would be safer to do something outdoors in the fall. If you said it was going to happen three weekends in a row, you might get it in one of those weekends rather than just put it all on all our eggs in one basket. But that's just how we roll. And so if it's raining, we're going to do it anyway. We want people to wear rain gear and come and be part of it. Prove that people here really do go out in the urban environment in all kinds of conditions
and
if
people,
there's a good reason.
And people will talk about it more. Do you remember the rain?
Yeah.
You know, standing out there in the rain. I mean, again, I keep saying this, but that kind of, that builds community.
Yeah. That hardship we all mm-hmm. experience yeah. together.
Now, that isn't to say that there wouldn't be some extreme weather event that night that could cause us to have to,
3 feet
to postpone. Or, well, mostly I'm thinking of the really, really bad windstorm we got at this time mm-hmm. last year that was actually, it went beyond just being
yes.
really, really big. It was really dangerous
yes.
because trees were falling down all over the place. And yeah. we would not put aerialists in harness out on the museum roof, and no one would come if it was like that. But it would have to be something fairly extreme. But otherwise, and even if we're having a huge windstorm like that and we have to cancel or postpone the show, the after party is going to go on because that's going to be safe indoors, and mm-hmm. we want mm-hmm. everybody to come to that regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Don't bring umbrellas because umbrellas won't really work because no
my
one
question.
Will be able
yeah.
to see.
Yeah.
Just wear your rain gear, bring your hoods, bring an umbrella, but then as soon as you hear as soon as you know the show's about to start, you're going to have to put your umbrella down or the person next to you won't be able to see the show.
Yeah. Is the scaffolding going to stay up there so that you can do this again, or is it come down?
One time only.
One time only. So nobody else gets to use it. Yeah.
Although it will be there forevermore.
I'll talk
kidding.
To Bruce after the program.
Sorry, our budget ran out. We had just enough money to install it.
We don't have any money to take it down. Yeah. Let's see. What else can we talk about?
I would like to revisit something Kathleen
yeah.
said earlier about leaving the state and then coming back and exploring it differently. And I would just urge people to think about that more. For instance, this weekend in my classes, I had two different classes do explorations. And we talk a lot in Alaska about expeditions, but we never talk about urban expeditions. And so one class, I had them follow a map, any map they could find, a tourist map, a map online of foodie sites around town. And the students commented that they had lived there their whole lives, but never really saw this place. And so I think that that's an easy thing to do, just to open your eyes to imagining this place looking different, even if you've seen it every day in your car or walking around. And another event that we're having for Engage Week, also November 9th, is Jane Jacobs Walks. And Jane Jacobs, for those of you who know her, she was a very famous urban life writer. Her book, The Life and Death of Great American Cities in the 1960s,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty seminal work. Jane Jacobs Walks is another international event. It usually happens in May, but we're going to do one now in the fall and one in the spring, and people can sign up, and that sign up will eventually be on the Center for Community Engagement and Learning website. And students from my honors class will be taking people around on walks around town.
That's wonderful.
We're out of time.
We're out of time, but you can say one sentence.
One sentence. Oh, just wanted to say that we're hoping that this will also inspire other artists to start doing things like what we're doing.
Like what you're doing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you to our guests, Bruce Farnsworth, Julie Decker, Bree Kessler. Thank you so much. Remember the date, September 21st. Go online at alaskapublic.org to find tickets to the after party. And thanks to our listeners and callers. Thank you so much. Next week, Charles Walforth will return as your host on the topic, The Church and Prejudice, with Dr. Michael Burke as the guest. Pat Yak is our Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Platt is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.